Oh yeah, another point about oral history outside of university. In North America, oral history is also used a lot for theater and art and literature. Is that something that you find in Germany?
Yes, this guy I'd mentioned before, Kempowski is his name, Walter Kempowski. He used these interviews for his novels and films. And there are a lot of filmers, like my colleague and friend Loretta Wals, who are using interviews and making films, documentaries. For instance, she just now for about Ravensbrück, the women's quartet. And Walter Kempowski made a lot of very funny novels about this post-war time in Eastern Germany, where the Soviets had their own camps in Germany. I made a research on it. And he had used the words, the expressions, the idioms of that time. And it's a very, I like this now, these novels, yeah, just because of that. Just now there are a lot of documentaries. I'm in the board of four films in the meantime about GDR oppositions. Oppositions?
Position, yeah.
No, Oppositionelle.
People in the opposition.
Yeah, good. And there were 100 interviewed. I think you find some interviews within the own family for a lot of novels in the meantime. One, for instance, about the grandfather who was a general in Italy as a German. Then the famous film, Eins, nee, zwei, drei Dinge, die ich von ihm weiß, two, three things I know of him, about him. The film of Malte Ludin within his family. He interviewed his sisters, nephews, and so on. About the knowledge of his father, who was executed 1947 in Bratislava because he was a missionary of Hitler in the Slovakian Republic. That was an alliance and a quisling regime for the Nazis. And he was executed, and Malte Ludin he's the same age like me. He has only small remembrances. But then, when his mother died, he dared to make a film about this question, how the image of this father was in this family and how it changed or not. And that's interesting because I think it's the only film I know where three generations were asked about such a Nazi criminal, what's it?
Criminal.
Criminal. The person, I mean. The Nazi criminal, can I say it?
You mean about the father?
Yes.
Yeah.
I do not mean the deeds, I mean the person.
Yeah, he's a
It's a
criminal,
criminal,
el
yeah.
criminelo.
Okay, yeah. It's so strong, the struggles within the families about this father. What did he know? He must have known all, I think. But some of the members of the family tried to defend him, that he didn't know it really, what happened with the Jews coming from the Slovakian Republic and so on. It's a very hard film. He's man. And this film is really interesting. And he used a lot of these interviews of his family. There are some films, novels about this family stories because there are the sons, sisters, daughters, and who want to know more about the pictures of these persons. But it's not a systematical form where you can see these or hear these interviews.
And that reminds me, a method that Gabriele Rosenthal has been using, and also more recently Harald Welzer, is that of interviewing family groups, bringing members of two or three generations of one family together as a group and interviewing them together, in addition to doing the one-on-one interviews. Is that something that you have experimented with? Is that something that oral historians do at all?
No, I do not like these interviews. The following reasons. If you ask the family members all together, you like this unschärfe Relation, you put together perhaps persons who would not communicate at all, yes, but they do it because you ask them. Or you put them together and they have to be a group. That means they are harmonizing their differences. In our files, you find, or in our interviews, you find as a main tendency the broken communication within these generations. If you ask them together, you will not find those who have no communication. You are in struggle with their families, and so on. And Welzer, for instance, had only very few interviews, but he wrote a big book about the with the title "Opa Was No Nazi." And I asked in the meantime some of the members of this project, and they do not like it, like for the same reasons as me, because they know that they have only a special group, and you can't generalize this thesis that he has. You know this thesis of Welzer? He says there is accumulation of heroism, eine kumulative heroisierung. There's a heroisierung, a heroi, what would you say?
Heroization, yeah.
Heroization.
Cumulative
Yeah.
heroization across the
Because
generations.
the grandfather, for instance, would not say that he was in resistance or he did some activities against the Nazis, but the sons and daughters say it like that a little bit, and the third generation is in the meantime nearly heroizing these grandfather. And it's totally, it's a minority within our interviews, yes? Because most of them were critical, were suspicious against the parents in my generation, for instance. And even the third generations would not heroize,
Hero eyes.
heroize them. Yes. Therefore, I do not like such systematic mistakes by choosing specific interview groups. Yes. And it is a systematical mistake if you think. If when you ask a family, you have the right to generalize the results. You have only these interviewees who are speaking together, who are a little bit interested to say no bad things about the grandfather, and you do not have those like me and a lot of other families where the communication stopped about National Socialism or even broke up. I was, for instance, in, also, enterbed, was heißt das?
Disowned.
Disowned and so on. And there are such, so many struggles within so many families, mm-hmm. like Malte Ludin's film show, that, like Malte Ludin's film about his father shows, mm-hmm. That I wouldn't dare to generalize it in the way like Harald Welser.
But I think what I'm interested in is not so much what he did with the interviews, yeah. but the idea of using a group interview as an extension of
yes, a group interviews. Box. Yeah, a pair interviews we use as well. But I like it more to have the interviews done,
the
person by
yeah.
person, and then perhaps I ask them together again.
And that's what I mean.
Yeah,
and then I think that's what both. They did too. Yeah, no. They did one-on-one interviews
yeah.
as well,
and or we sometimes had groups where we asked some questions and they discussed it among themselves.
Mm.
That's very interesting for special questions.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I like more these very personal interviews. But there are situations where it makes sense to ask more, then they can discuss something if somebody is remembering something correctly or not, and my remembrance is different, and so on and so on. Then it's interesting. Just mm-hmm. if you would like to have facts and figures,
mm-hmm.
or if you would like to know how the communication is between the family members.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes, if you would like to have this, then it's interesting. But mm-hmm. then you must be aware of such systematical mistakes. Mm-hmm. I wrote an essay on
that. Got that, yeah.
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 That's always a question. What's your group? Why did you interview them?
Mm-hmm.
What's the aim of this project? And how can you get a widespread group with very, very different origins, orientations, religious, for instance, orientation, sexes, and so on. And then you can hope to get very different perspectives mm-hmm. on a special problem.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Yeah. Just what do you think is the public's general view and understanding of oral history in Germany? Do you think that Germans in general know actually what oral history is?
No.
No,
no, I think the expression is not very well known. But I think what's known is asking time witnesses
mm-hmm.
Just by journalists, not by the university or by historians. The main form of using time witnesses is happening in the TV.
And what do you think of that? Because that has really spread a lot. I mean, that has mushroomed over the last decade or so.
Yeah.
The using of eyewitnesses.
Yeah. Who you mean?
Well, just general. I mean,
yeah.
It just seems that in the last 10 years, it has increased,
yeah.
increased dramatically.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, all these shows, not just by, what's his name, the ZDF guy?
Guido Knopf.
Yeah. Mm. But everyone uses them in a very similar way. And often in a very, it seems to me, uncritical way.
Yes.
In a sort of a fact-finding mission, or just simply to evoke emotions that somehow touch the audiences.
Yeah.
Without any of the critical questioning.
Yeah, I think it's in that way. It's not always. Guido Knopp is a chief redactor. The films are done by directors with a very different, professional or less professional capacities. I worked together with a lot of them in films, and I know something about the differences between journalists and scientific work. I know that a journalist has to make different films than I would do it. They are in competition at the best prime time with totally different soap operas or whatever. But what I do not like is what you said, and in addition to that, there is no contextualization very, very often. Mm-hmm. You have this time witness or eyewitness as a truth. He gives us the truth. Even if you are using him in different films, for instance, Hitler's generals, for instance, then you can hear somebody. In the next film, it's going about the war or about expiation. You have these interviews, you have archived that, you can find specific expressions or passages, by this archival methods, and then you can use him. And you can do it because the interviews are done in the same way. They are sitting in the light, in the background only black, a black curtain, with one Strahl, one shine of...
Beam?
Wie?
A beam?
A beam, one beam of light, only a very small one in the background. Therefore, you can put them all together in any films and nobody realize that it's done 10 years ago. Or the hardest case I remember was that there is always a man... And nobody knows that he was a KZ medicine doctor, a doctor.
Concentration camp.
Concentration camp, yeah. And so on. Yeah? As if they are used in that way, that you can't, that you do not see any context of this person and its biography and of the story they are telling, then I think it's nearly a crime.
Yeah. And who did all of these interviews?
Well, some of them I did. It's a joke. Yes, I made it only for two films. I made interviews when I made this preparation for the film for about the reunification. The later director was involved in a detective series, and he couldn't do this in these interviews. And I made some interviews with the leaders of the United States, Great Britain, and Germany, and Russia, yeah. And I asked them, and then he made the film. I made the treatment that my friend, a producer, got the money, and then he came and made the film. Mm-hmm. And he used something from me, but it's his film. But it's a very good one. In two parts about the national and the international aspects of reunification. Mm-hmm. But it's not done by Guido Knapp. It is supported by his reduction. Yeah? I like, for instance, so-called... I do not know the English word, where you have, on the one way... an incinerated film, and mm-hmm. on the other hand, you are using historical pictures, films, Wochenschauen, weekly
news, yeah,
news, and so on.
Newsreel,
And there is an actor who is playing, for instance, Gorbachev. Yeah?
Sort of the reenactment.
Yeah, perhaps it's called like that.
Yeah.
Mm. And the difference between that what you use as a source, like this older films or pictures, and that what you are incinerating, because you haven't such sources, such pictures, such films. And everybody knows this, can know this difference. But it's interesting how influential, or how big the influence was, how strong, on pupils, for instance, and normal people who like these films or who do not like it. I know a lot of people who say, no, it was not in that way, it was in another way. And just on Dresden, there was a documentary on Dresden with a lot of interviewees. And it's clear that there are different views on such an event like the bombing of Dresden.
But it sounds in general, it sounds like you like the fact that oral history interviews are more used nowadays in for television and so on. Or do you see that as a good development? Or is it, let me ask it this way, is it
No,
something that has.
I see it, I think I see it more in a bad light, because they have some dimensions, some dimensions of using time witnesses, which verunglimpft, which makes it very hard for us to use these interviews as a historical source. Because they, what you said, yes, they have to look for the emotions. They tell us something like a soap opera sometimes. And the for instance, if there are Nazis and they are losing their jobs, then you have perhaps mitleid, misery,
Compassion, yeah.
compassion with them, and so on. And I think you have to use it very carefully. On the other hand, the universities had a big lack on using the interviews and the to look for the personal dimension of history. And therefore, this lack was filled by the journalists. And it's no wonder that journalists have these interests to make a film interesting, emotional, without any belief, without any
Evidence.
evidence, and so on. Yes, and therefore, they have this possibility. They did it, and the historians are very suspicious until now. But in the meantime, there is a knowledge within the historians that you can use it differently.
So it's something that historians really, they missed the train on that one. They missed the train. They haben's verschlafen.
How is the
Die
English?
haben's, they missed the train.
They missed the train.
On this one. It sounds like, you know, that they, if they had taken ownership of oral history in the 80s and 90s, would
Perhaps.
have been more difficult for journalists to just do oral histories the way they do it without going to, you know, academic oral historians.
Yes, I think so, but perhaps it's a fundamental, more fundamental problem. You know that one of the Swedish colleagues, Lindquist, wrote a book with a famous title, A Dig Where You Are Standing. Grabe, wo du stehst. in Germany, it's very hard to dig where you are standing, because perhaps you find not that what you want to. Just those who started with the history workshop movement, they wanted to dig where they are living, and they found a lot of bad things, of perpetrators, of dictatorship, opportunism, and so on. And that is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were lucky to find some resistant fighters, but that's not the whole history, if you understand. And therefore, perhaps in Germany, the oral history or the personal remembrance was so disavowed, so less accepted, because there were so many who were involved in the National Socialism, and it's not so angenehm, not so
nice.
Nice to find such things.
There's nothing to celebrate.
I mean, nothing to celebrate, yes.
In North America, you have a lot of oral history that celebrates experience.
Yeah, but you can have others, like black slaves or Indians and so on. You can do it in the United States as well. And I was astonished by when Ron Greeley showed me one of the first or some of the first interview projects which were on slaves on Indians, and it was not a heroic history.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.